This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 8th of October, 1956. The title of this lecture is March of the Atom. It is Radiation and Your Survival, tape number 1. Copyright 1957 by L. Ron Hubbard in the United Kingdom. Copyright 1978 by L. Ron Hubbard in the USA. All rights reserved. Unauthorized translation, duplication, importation, and distribution is a violation of applicable laws. This tape is 58 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Evidently, there isn't too much known at this time concerning radiation, its testing, and the immediate results of radiation on the health of Earth. Evidently, if people of our strata, and do not make any mistake, sometimes people like to slur Scientologists a bit and say that they do not represent this and that, but the truth of the matter is, from the intelligence tests which exist and from the professional ratings and so forth of the individuals in Scientology, you're actually dealing with the upper strata, the intelligentsia of the world. Now, you can look around you and say, oh, no. You can look at me and say, my God, not that. But Scientology represents the upper bracket. And if we don't know anything about radiation as a body, if we in general, as Scientologists, are not informed on this particular subject, then don't think that somebody down here in the Chancellor of the Exchequer's office knows anything about it. Don't for a minute think that the ambassador to Ceylon knows anything about it. And we are up against something very appalling here. This whole subject of radiation is evidently relegated to the category of a highly technical subject which nobody else knows anything about. Now, it may or may not be that radiation will eventually wipe out the population of Earth. That may or may not be. But the point is that here is an area that is a total blank on the subject of healing. Although some studies have been made concerning radiation, I cannot guarantee either the sensibleness of those studies, nor their findings, nor the personnel which conducted them. This is quite interesting. You read something. Would you like to hear something about this? Would you like to hear something about this? Naturally, because I was educated in the field of atomic physics, which doesn't mean a thing, by the way. It merely meant that I was there by duress. I wasn't really supposed to be there. I was a writer, and I had to go to school just like anybody else, and they said that was what I was taking, and so I obediently sat there and took it, but not very deeply. My field and fort was the field of writing and philosophy. These were my forts, and that was what my interest in reading lay in. But I had to take this. Maybe that's fortunate, maybe it's unfortunate, but to be subjected to this much mathematical discipline and this much extreme duress on the subject of it is this way, even though you couldn't even see the little molecules wiggle. You know, it's very interesting for somebody to tell you that wall is composed entirely of space when, if you bump into it, you hurt yourself to beat the band. And my first reaction to the entire field of nuclear physics, called in those days, not nuclear physics, by the way, but atomic and molecular phenomena, a much wider subject than nuclear physics. Nuclear physics is a small branch of that. Was that somebody had better get down and make a study out of this. You know, sooner or later, somebody really ought to go into this subject to stop this nonsense. And it's very interesting that in today's processing, you take almost any preclear, and you tell him to hold the wall still, and after a while, he tells you he can't. You say, why not? He says, well, all the molecules that are wiggling in it, all the atoms. Oh, you say, well, hold them still, too. And you say, oh, I can't do that. Can't do that. The whole thing would blow up. You say, go ahead and hold them still anyway, like a good auditor, and follow out the command. Very interesting thing is nothing blows up and his entire physics education blows out. And he has, for the first time, a solid wall. So the whole operation of physics begins to look like an operation. It says everything is built out of holes. It's an interesting universe in which we live, where everything is built out of holes. That means there are no walls, where everything is in motion. Think of that for a moment. If a thetan for his comfort depends upon a certain amount of stillness and quiet, for a subject to come forward and tell everybody that everything is wiggling all the time, doesn't to me sound like a subject or a science. It sounds like an operation. But it's interesting. You want to make that experiment, you Scientologists. Have somebody hold the wall. Just grab somebody, particularly an electronics engineer or something like that, and have him hold everything in the wall still. And you'll get rid of his entire education, just like that. Boom. Gone. And he begins to laugh about it. He realizes that he has been made nervous all these years by this deep education he had, which taught him that, I don't know if you probably, some of you don't even credit the fact that modern physics tells us that that wall which you see in front of you, in which you can kick and so forth, is built out of space. And that space is studded with little tiny universes of some kind or another, which are in constant motion, and that these are in juxtaposition to each other, distributed through the wall, but they don't have any mass either. They only have motion. Now, that is the tech on which all of this nonsense is built. And you go over there, and you'll find a solid wall. It's very hard for a rational young man. Of course, I wasn't a particularly rational young man, but it's very hard for a young man of myself to absorb this. But I did dutifully, and flunked all my examinations, got the worst grades in the school. The only reason they passed me is they said, "Hubbard, we know you will never practice this subject, therefore we're going to..." that was right back at the first turn of the 30s. And the boys who had studied this subject were known at that time as Buck Rogers boys. Buck Rogers, the comic strip character, space opera, indulged in all sorts of rocket pistols and spaceships and that sort of thing. And there was no demand at all. So actually they stopped teaching the course about the middle 30s, and it wasn't until, I think, really about 1944 that universities started teaching this subject again, really teaching it. All of the work on the, quote, atomic bomb, unquote, was done for the most part by, I don't know, English professors and so forth. They had run fresh out of nuclear physicists. This is the truth, by the way. There are frankly no nuclear physicists in these projects. There are physicists, but what a vast difference there is between somebody who was a graduate expert on atomic molecular phenomena and a physicist. There's a tremendous difference. Now, in the first place, atomic molecular phenomena tells you that the entire subject of physics is a lie. It tells you that all this conservation of energy and that sort of thing. Now, England was really the borning place for this subject. There was a chap that a comet is named after. You know Halley's Comet? Well, this chap Halley did an enormous amount of work with atoms and molecules and theories and that sort of thing. And goes back down through the years. Nearly all of the important work on the subject of nuclear physics is English. It is not American or French or even Italian. Some of the very modern contributions have come from other countries. But it boils down to this. Here was a new subject that suddenly blew into view. Franklin Delano Roosevelt wrote a check for $3 billion. Just like that. That's a nice big check. $3 billion. If Christ, standing on the side of the Sea of Galilee, threw a half crown into the sea every minute, from the moment he was born, straight on forward until now, he would not yet have tossed into the Sea of Galilee $1 billion. That's quite a bit of money. And the government wrote the check out. And the project at that time was cooperative between the English and the American governments. And they up and developed themselves an A-bomb. And they didn't really develop it on paper. They developed it by bars of this and that, and they made a pile. And they tested for critical mass, and they did an empirical job. And all they really know today about atomic fission is simply this. If you get that much plutonium together, it explodes. See, that's, I don't care what their theories are. They tie themselves down with these theories and change them every month. There's nobody quite so adrift as somebody in one of these atomic energy projects. You go around to him and say, what is the current theory? And he laughs kind of weakly. You know, it's like us Scientologists. What's the current process? Well, first and foremost, it is not particularly then a highly specialized subject, since those who are engaged in studying it are, I have to say, very few of them been trained, very few have been trained thoroughly in atomic molecular phenomena. See, there aren't that many people in atomic molecular phenomena. There were probably only somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 or 400 of them in 1933. And then they stopped educating them to a marked degree. And during the war, there was a boom. So what did they fill the boom with? Lord knows. Anybody who came along. As a matter of fact, I got a hold of one of these chaps that was with the Atomic Energy Commission in Washington, and I remembered him from George Washington University, where I went to school. And I said, well, I said, what are you doing? And he said, oh, I'm over in the Atomic Energy Commission. I said, what are you doing, correcting their papers or writing their notebooks or something of the sort? Oh, no, he said, I'm scientist, the mathematician on the staff. I said, no. Because this man's major was English. Now, I don't mean to cast any kind of cloud over these chaps. I'm merely trying to tell you only one datum, and that is that very few, if any, including me, know anything about it. The only thing I'm trying to tell you is that it is not a subject which is over here in a safe guarded by a bunch of super-educated scientists, you see. It's not that subject. It is a subject that works because they found that when you took just so much plutonium and put it in position to so much plutonium that it went boom and made other things go boom too. They know that thoroughly. And they also know how to take uranium and refine it and then process it so as to get plutonium. These things they know. Cooks know how to make cakes, you know. But don't ask a cook too much about the theory of flavor. He's liable to give you all sorts of balderdash, and it sounds terribly interesting, but has nothing to do with his making a cake. In other words, I'm trying to tell you that there really is no subject in the world, so far as I know, which is this a subject, atomic radiation, which is nailed down that one group of people know all about. Now, this is the misnomer. Nearly everybody in the world thinks this is a subject that a small group of scientists have well in hand. And each one of those scientists who were pointed at directly think that someplace, somebody's got this subject well in hand. And you go to one branch of the government and you say, how about your atomic energy program? Oh, well, they've got it all in hand over there in such an office. Yes, fine. So you go over to that office and you say, now, how about your atomic energy program? Oh, that's all in the hands of the Atomic Energy Commission. They have it all under control. And you go over to the Atomic Energy Commission. You say, well, what about the atomic projects you have and all that sort of thing? Oh, everything is just coming along fine. The Army has that all under control. Oh, I mean, it's almost this bad. You go around and you don't find any person who is the authority, who does issue the orders, who does issue the cautions and monitor the situation worldwide on the subject of atomic radiation. There's no such boss, either here or in America. It is not that packaged a subject, don't you see? There are big test projects. There are big bomb explosion projects. And these have medical units. And those medical units are over here in other medical units. And everybody has an opinion that everybody has an opinion. And it's not one of these precise spheres of nailed-down knowledge. It just isn't. One of the chaps in the Naval Aircraft Plant at Philadelphia one time, whose name you probably know because he's a very famous science fiction writer, Robert A. Heinlein. Robert A. Heinlein said, someday somebody is going to lose the slip of paper of how many things they piled up in the last pile, and there will go the United States. Now, it isn't that people are handling this carelessly. But just as you consider this a specialized subject, so do all of them consider this a specialized subject. And just as you suppose that everybody certainly has a grip on this, except yourself, so does everybody suppose that everybody has a grip on this except themselves. You get how a subject like that could go out from under. Now, in the field of radiation, I see in some of your faces you say it couldn't possibly be that bad. Well, it's not that bad, it's worse. If you have everybody believing, it's this matter of agreement. What is reality? It's everybody's agreement. If everybody has agreed this subject is under control, and nobody has this subject under control, you would get a very interesting world situation. Don't you think you would? Well, I just look across the audience here, and I see young men who just took a course in medical atomic radiation. What can you do for somebody who's been atomized, somebody who's been exposed to this sort of thing? And undoubtedly, there was lots of data given in the course, but it adds up to Lord knows how much equipment per patient. So if you had a couple of hospitals full of equipment, you could treat one patient. But in a time of disaster, of atomic radiation, everybody's patients, and there is maybe just enough equipment to treat one or two at a time. This is not then an adequate answer. Now, last February, we tried to get some answer to this question, and I went appetite over tin cup as a result. Too much radiation exposure. Fascinating. But there doesn't seem to be, even in Scientology, a good answer to it. The human body is simply allergic to this stuff called atomic radiation. It's just allergic to it, that's all. Its ridges are actually, its standing electronic ridges and so on, are actually built around burned out radiation. Radiation is evidently very common to the track of the genetic entity. Radiation is evidently a well-known subject on the back track. It's not something new, and everybody's scared of it. And that's why everybody's perfectly willing to say, there is a terminal over there that knows all about it, but I'm here. How do you see this reasoning? They know there is a lion loose in the woods, but they're perfectly content that perfectly adequate and well-trained keepers are after him. Only the persons who are telling you this are the people who ought to be the keepers. Now, to a large degree, the amount of care that has been exhibited in experimentation and so forth has been adequate in that not any vast number of people have been injured. And after its first furious use in Japan, it has not subsequently done anything very much to anybody. But atomic radiation today is one of the little known, only slightly controlled subjects that confront man, and is the one thing which poses an end to his time track. Very little is known. I stress that point. Very little is known. There would have to be a tremendous amount of study. I'll give you an example of that. I met a young man. He was part of an atomic project. He ran into me, and the government had whistled in my direction very early in these endeavors, and I'd say, what are you going to do with atomic radiation? I said, we're going to build bombs. And I said, that's a nice, sane attitude. Look somewhere else. I won't have any hand in it. And oddly enough, nearly every other atomic physicist of note, not myself, because I'm not an atomic physicist of note, I'm a writer, just happened to get in on it. And nearly every one of these chaps has now backed out. They have backed out because they see that it is dangerous, and they don't feel that they themselves can do anything about it. They feel helpless. This is chaps like Eisenhower. Even before his death, Einstein had. Do you know Einstein was putting ads in newspapers and using his own funds to try to get the world conscious of the fact that he had let a real lion loose in its midst? Now, there's something interesting. It was Einstein who told Franklin Delano Roosevelt that he could build a bomb which would destroy cities. And then Einstein spent the rest of his natural life trying to get them to use it for something else, please. And he even used to tell the press, no, I never told people that. But his original letter to Franklin Delano Roosevelt is a matter of record. And I have read that letter. And it did say, dear Mr. President, there is a development in the field of physics which could be employed in warfare and could destroy whole cities and their entire populations. He did say that. And he spent the rest of his life sad about that fact and trying to do something about it. He spent the rest of his life trying to get organizations of scientists together who would put a stop on the use of this material. Well, that was the most notable man in the subject. What about the rest of us? Somehow or another, man has developed a weapon of which he himself, as an individual, is so afraid that he really will not express a very sound opinion on the subject. He flinches. He flinches. He doesn't want to confront this thing. It's too painful. Kills people too dead. His body vaguely remembers what this is all about. And they keep on blowing bombs off. They keep on blowing them off in the United States. They keep on blowing them off in Australia, over in Russia. The only country which is wise on this subject and earned its wisdom in a gruesome way is Japan. And Japan right now is counting a number of rentgen, which is the radioactive presence in an area that's measured by rentgen. And it's counting the rentgen over its skies, and it's protesting to every nation on Earth and the United Nations and anybody else who will listen, and saying our population right now has been brought up to a point where it is dangerous to our people, to our whole population. Well, there is a country that knows what it is to be atom bombed. And it's screaming. These screams are not published very widely, but they're published. Now, the next thing about it is how much information do we have about radiation poisoning in general of the atmosphere of Earth? How much information do we actually have? Well, I'll tell you the kind of government bulletin that comes out. This is not any matter of top secret, this and that. You understand, I have in my possession no secret information of any kind relating to atomic fission. And I would have it audited out if I did. But here we have a bulletin saying, public worry over the last bomb explosion is unfounded. The fallout is being carefully watched. Let's read that again. The fallout is being carefully watched. So I went around and I said, what about this? What is the fallout doing? Oh, well, I don't know anything about that. It's being watched. Well, that's fine. Now, how much fallout is there? Oh, it's all being watched. Well, who cares who's watching it? Listen, you can sit on the side of an arena and watch a woman being eaten up by a lion, too. But that doesn't mean that it's a good show. Evidently, they're the opinion that if everybody carefully watches the fallout, nothing's going to happen. How about watching the arsenic go into the London water supply? Same thing. Supposing Londoners started to drop dead from arsenic poisoning in the water mains, you know, and the government issued a bulletin, the London County Council issued a bulletin, and they said, I don't see why you're so worried about the arsenic in the water supply, because all of the reservoirs are being carefully watched. And every time some is put in, it's put in very carefully watched. It just is this idiotic. Now, in the first place, there's practically nothing known about radiation poisoning of an atmosphere. This is the only planet they've had to work on this time. And they haven't any prior examples. And they work best on prior examples. So they will know when they reach a saturation point of gamma in the atmosphere of Earth, when Earth no longer supports life. I've been told that. And I look everywhere I can look to find somebody who will make a sensible statement. Just sensible. Now, I actually advanced this interesting thing. Do you know that it is atomic dust gathering in the ionosphere and the stratosphere which brings about the condition of re-stimulation, influenza and other things, broadly around the area of a bomb explosion? Do you know that is the case? Well, everybody would know that. No. Have you made any experiments? Well, no, we watched the fallout carefully. Well, you give up about that point because actually better experiments and observations are being made right here in London with bathtubs on roofs. Now, here and there amongst the public, people have gotten interested in this subject, and they have started to measure the amount of gamma in rainfall with bathtubs on their apartment house roofs. Now, I tell you, when this man in the street, you might say, goes home at night and does experiments to test the amount of gamma in the atmosphere, and officialdom doesn't seem to know, we have a very odd state of affairs. But here and there in the society at this time, we evidently do have some chaps who have become suspicious of all of this learned watching the fallout carefully. And they're finding that the gamma count in rainwater, after a rain and so forth, is much, much higher than when it's a little bit present, you know, after a thunderstorm. But it's now uniformly much higher than that. It is significantly high. Now, what do we mean by a count? What do we mean by a count? It's how many rentgen, that is to say, a measurement of force, are present at any given instant in any given area. You take a meter, you might say, well, go ahead, as crudely as this, you take a meter that registers it and you hold it up to a given area and it goes clickety, 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 click. You know. Geiger counters go clickety, clickety, click all the time anyway. They go tick, 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 tick. You listen to a Geiger counter and you get it near some radiation and it goes tick, 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 tick. You get a little closer to it and it goes brrrr. And that is the type of meter which is used. They're very easy to come by. People are making fortunes today selling Geiger counters all over the world. These do measure a certain amount of radiation. Well, what is radiation? Radiation is the particle which emanates from an explosion, or a particle which emanates from radium or uranium. But it's a particle emanating. That is all it is. Now, when you make a big explosion, you get lots of particles emanating that go right on emanating. When you have a small deposit of uranium, you have particles emanating, of course, but you have to be close to it, and they have a tendency to die down. But how about this explosion? Here's this tremendous amount of plutonium goes up, and this tremendous amount of gamma, and its associated particles go out in all directions. How far does it go, and how long does it continue? Nobody knows. But this is an interesting point. If we were merely throwing arsenic into the air or throwing London fog into the air, it dissipates. It goes away. Something happens to it. It dies down. It falls into the sea. It does other things. A person who is hurt by fog today doesn't necessarily have any effect from it next week, any greater, you see. Just because he takes a little bit of fog into his system doesn't mean that he will get a cumulative effect. He gets over it, and then he gets some more fog, and he gets over that, and he gets some more fog, and gets over that, and he goes on living. This isn't true of gamma. This isn't true of radiation, and this is what makes it different, and this is the only thing that really makes it different. The cumulative effect means this. We will say that somebody is going to be exposed. This is not exactly correct, but it gives you the idea. He's exposed to 300 rentgen of radiation on Tuesday. Next Tuesday, he's exposed to 300 rentgen of radiation. The following Tuesday, he's exposed to 300 rentgen. He has now been exposed to 900 rentgen. It doesn't go away. You see this? See? It isn't a London fog on Tuesday, and he's breathing again by Friday, and another London fog, and so on. It's just a London fog. He's getting one fog at a time. With gamma, this isn't what happens. He gets 300 rengen, and then he gets another 300 rengen, and it doesn't matter whether they're a year apart or 2 days apart. They add. It's cumulative, in other words. It's additive. All right. So they throw this amount of gamma into the upper atmosphere by a huge explosion, and then a few weeks later, throw another one up into the atmosphere, and then a few weeks later, throw another one up into the upper atmosphere, and a few weeks later, throw another one. It isn't a question of will the rain clear that gamma out. It is a question of how many people did you expose? How far was the exposure felt? See, that is what it's a question of. It ceases to be a question, actually, of the presence of the gamma, or whether it goes away and falls into the sea and poisons all the fish for Japan or something. That's not the point. The point is by those flashes and by its presence in the air, how much has it permitted to accumulate in the populace? That is the point. And this is not one of these points that's easily grasped. Now, it so happens that they're exploding this stuff at a very fantastic rate without paying too much attention. They see that it disappears. But because they cannot measure the tiny effect, they can only measure it on a cumulative basis. And then they will only know when everybody gets good and sick. This is one of those things that you don't learn by experience. There is nothing in atomic radiation that can be learned by experience. If there's ever an atomic war, everybody will now know how to take care of an atomic war. That's for sure. They'll all be dead. But they'll all know how to take care of an atomic war. There'll be 3 light years on the other side of Earth sitting there saying, well, what do you know? You don't get a second crack at it. Here on Earth, they did bomb a couple of cities with a very small, minor missile. This was a small missile. Now, those bombings have not really served us in very good stead. They haven't learned as much as they should have learned from those. The first thing they should have learned with those is that it isn't a good weapon. That's the first thing they should have learned. But they haven't learned these things.